We will talk about the power of faith, but not the power of faith as if our faith has power, we can do miracles. We all know this. It will be more like how to increase the power of our faith in order to be able to do what we need to do as Christians. So the power of faith is not an easy subject, but hopefully we will all leave here having few things to think about tonight. So what is faith? There is a description in the New Testament given by Apostle Paul. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. It is the 11th chapter from his letter to the Hebrews. If you read it, you will get a good idea of what faith can achieve. I will just read a few lines for you tonight. Through faith, subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their death raised to life again. Others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trial of mockiness and scourginess, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn into two, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. That's from the Hebrews epistle, as we said. So all these are achievements of faith. There was a young man once, and he went to see a wise elder. He told him his problems. He probably had something that was bothering him more than anything else. This boy was very close to the church. He was following his conscience in everything, and yet there was something that was constantly bothering him. Let's say something like a mother-in-law. So the elder looked at him firmly and asked him, "Do you believe?" The boy jumped up from his seat and he replied, "Of course I believe. What sort of question is this?" The elder didn't mean to be rude, and the young man didn't mean to be rude either. He jumped up because he loved God. For a minute he forgot it was a holy man who was asking him this question, not someone who wanted to test his faith. But he could not even imagine himself not believing. The wise elder asked and moved on, did not comment on anything. He just asked. But this question stirred up all the inner self of the young man and made him reevaluate every single thing he was doing. Was it done with faith? To believe theoretically that you have faith is not enough. When the tribulation, difficulties, the temptations, the dead ends arrive in our lives, do you show your faith? Do they bother you? Because in case they do, where is your faith? Do you really believe? What does the resurrection mean to you? Are you a Christian in your heart or on paper, just on paper? And if you truly are a believer, what could ever frighten or trouble you? So do we believe? Why are you all here tonight? Is it out of curiosity? Maybe. But I would say that even if you were curious, you would probably also had more interesting things to do in your lives on a Saturday night. If not, you are just boring like me. But I think you came here tonight, believe it or not, knowing it or not, because you all believe. Our problem then is not a foundational kind of faith. I would say we all here have that much of it. Our question is how to make this average or lukewarm faith steaming hot, powerful and strong. I believe, Lord, help my unbelief. This is what the desperate father said to Jesus when the demon left his son. Once our faith becomes strong, miracles can happen around and inside us. It is interesting why the demon left his son right after Jesus commanded him. All the demons believe in God. You could never find a demon declaring that he is an atheist. All the demons are true believers. Be careful here. There are no true followers, but true believers. They believe because they know that God exists. He is the one pulling them out of the demon-possessed people. How could they not believe? They do believe. Their pride wanted to steal God's authority and power. This is how from angels they became demons. If they did not believe, why would they ever try to override him? If you do not believe in something, you just ignore it. But when you fight with someone, how can you not believe he exists? Demons fought against God. They do believe in his existence. They are certain of his existence, and they are also afraid of him. Can you imagine the demons being true believers and us, because God created us free to choose what we like to follow in our lives, to ignore our Creator and convince ourselves he does not exist? If we find it hard to believe, we should examine the level of humility or pride inside us. It is not because there are no signs around us to indicate his existence and love for us. It is because our pride blurs our vision and understanding, and we cannot see and understand what's in front of us clearly. I can give you an example of stubbornness and voluntary lack of faith. When the Jews were in Egypt, God enlightened Moses to lead them back to their promised land. Pharaoh's pride was so great that he could not accept anyone being stronger than him, anyone he would have to obey to, not even God. A number of events took place, but Pharaoh consciously refused to believe in the living God. Here is a summary of these events, just to confirm how stubborn humans can be. At the beginning, Moses went and asked Pharaoh nicely to let God's people go. Pharaoh wanted a sign to believe that the Hebrews' God is real. Moses' brother Aaron threw his rod on the ground and it became a serpent. The Egyptian magicians did the same. Then Aaron's rod swallowed up all their rods, but Pharaoh was not convinced. Next day, Moses turned the river's water into blood. The fish died, and the people were unable to drink from the river. Pharaoh was not moved. 7 days later, Moses asked him again to let them go. He refused. And frogs came up from the waters and covered all the land of Egypt. Pharaoh called Moses and said to him, "Pray to the Lord for me and take away the frogs from me and my people, and I will let your people go." Moses prayed and the frogs went away, but Pharaoh did not keep his promise. His heart was not convinced about God's existence. His ego was still blocking off his faith. Then Moses brought forth lies from the dust of the air. It affected all the Egyptians and all their animals. Pharaoh's sorcerers could not imitate the miracle and told Pharaoh that this was indeed God's finger. Pharaoh still did not believe. The next plague was dog flies on all Egyptians and their animals. Pharaoh asked Moses to remove them, but as soon as they were gone, he did not let them live again. Then all Egyptian cattle died when not even a Jewish one God seek. Pharaoh still did not believe. Afterwards, both men and beasts were affected with painful sores on their bodies. This also didn't change Pharaoh. And then hail and fire fell on Egypt. The hail size was big like never seen before and killed whoever found uncovered. Pharaoh said to Moses, I have sinned this time. The Lord is righteous, and my people and I are ungodly. Therefore pray for me to the Lord. He didn't mean what he said. He didn't really want prayers. He only wanted things his way. As soon as the natural phenomenon ceased, he again did not let them free. And then locusts fell upon Egypt and covered all the earth, so that no one was able to see on earth. They ate whatever was not destroyed already, and they filled up all their homes. Pharaoh asked to negotiate and let them go, but he had conditions. So the next plague was darkness, a thick darkness that could be felt. No one saw his brother for 3 days, and no one rose from his bed for 3 days. All the Israelites had light in their dwellings. Pharaoh not only tried to enforce conditions again like before, if he was to let them go, but he ended up being so angry that he said to Moses, depart from me, take heed to yourself that you see my face no more, for in the day you see my face, you shall die. And the final plague was the death of all Egyptians' firstborn males, including Pharaoh's son. Pharaoh finally let them go. Moses divided the Red Sea with God's grace, and they walked into the midst of the sea on the dry ground. The waters were a wall to them on their right hand and on their left hand. When Pharaoh realized that they left, he changed his mind for the 10th time and marched after them to bring them back. While Egyptians were in the middle of the Red Sea seizing them, Moses united the waters again, and all the Egyptians died in the deep waters. What a story. A very well-known story. I doubt, though, we all realize how related it could be to our own actions and our own level of faith or unbelief. Moses and his brother Aaron had enough faith in God to be able to perform this amazing series of miracles and free their people from the Egyptians. What our faith can do. Not one, but one miracle after another. This is what was happening with all the saints too. Pharaoh, on the other hand, continuously denied to believe. Even after his own son died, he was still fighting against God. Why? He was believing that God was performing all these miracles, punishments. The difference was that he was competing with God. He thought his authority and position was making him superior to the living God. Basically, he was worshiping himself. This is what makes our faith weak and our faith strong: the level of humility and dedication, or selfishness and egocentricity. So Moses and Aaron and all the saints of our church, they were focused on God, not themselves, and they were humble. This is what was making their faith miraculously advanced and powerful. Someone asked St. Paisios about the verse in the Gospel which says that if you have faith like a mustard seed, you can move mountains. His question was, don't we have faith as big as a tiny mustard seed? And St. Paisios replied, it is not that our faith is not as big as a mustard seed. It is usually bigger than that. It is that we are not humble enough. In case we move a mountain, it will not benefit us spiritually. Our pride will flare up. This is why God does not allow us to perform miracles. What could we gather out of the previous comments St. Paisios gave us? Probably that our focus, concentration, and full attention should be on God alone, not on what we might be able to do through God, as if we are special. Not on what God has gifted us with, but to God alone. If we use the power God has given us for personal glory, like Pharaoh, we will find ourselves fighting God. We will not only be left alone with the gifts God has given us, losing out on the salvation of our soul, which is all that matters, but we might even lose all these gifts we received on earth, material or spiritual gifts. There is also no chance of developing a mountain-moving faith without nipsis, without the dedication of our intellect. Nipsis is what keeps us focused and dedicated to God and stops us from redirecting our orientation to ourselves or anything other than God. In tomorrow's Gospel, we can see a perfect example of how nipsis affects the level of our faith and therefore the development of a miracle in our lives. Apostle Peter was with other disciples in their boat. The wind was against them and the waves were beating them. Jesus came to them walking on the sea. When they saw him, they were terrified, thinking he was a ghost. Peter said to him, "Lord, if it is you, bid me to come to you on the water." Jesus said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "O man of little faith, why did you doubt?" This is from tomorrow's Holy Gospel. So Jesus just advised us that little faith is related to doubting. The doubt was caused from the destruction of the waves. There was a miracle happening then and there, and it stopped from Apostle Peter's destruction. And let's look at it the other way around. What was the cause of the miracle? What started the miracle? The focus on Jesus. The focus on God has the power to overcome nature, has the ability to get us out of the waters with dry feet. It happened to Peter, and it happened to the Jews when they crossed the Red Sea, as we mentioned before. Nipsis is what made Peter reach Jesus. Nipsis is what makes the ascetics accommodate the living God inside them. What greater miracle than the union of our created soul with our uncreated Creator, with our Lord and God? These are the few things I wanted to tell you today. And if you have any questions, we can try and answer them. But what I'm trying to tell you is that if we want to increase our faith, we need to focus on God, and then everything happens by itself. And this is what the fathers of the church are calling nipsis. So without focusing on God, if we focus on the distractions around us, we can only sink in these distractions, in these waves, and it will be dangerous for ourselves and for everyone around us. But if we do focus on God, then we can walk on the waves and our feet will not even be wet. And this is what faith can do. Do you have any questions?
Yes.
Now the issue is that in the Old Testament, the Jews, they were focusing on the Promised Land, and there were prophecies about the Savior that would come on earth. But some of them, they did not believe in life after death. In some of the Jewish, some parts, because the Jews, they were divided in groups, and some groups of the Jews, they were not believing in life after death. That's why they had other questions, like, why would the rich people be happy in this life, and the poor people who are righteous, they would suffer? They couldn't explain this, because they did not believe in life after death. But the Old Testament was just to make some people who back then were hard, a bit softer, to be able to accept the nativity of Christ, their Savior, and the gospel of love at the end. So God punished Moses not to be able to see the Promised Land, but at the same time, he gave him the kingdom of heaven. So the punishment that he received, for him, back then it looked great, but it was nothing. It was just to tell him, like, you did something that you shouldn't have done, that's fine, I forgive you, you won't receive this, and he thought this was great. But then God gave him everything. He's in heaven with God. He's one of the prophets. So it doesn't really matter that God punished him in such a way. It's the same thing. Sometimes we get a disease, we get cancer, and we think, is God punishing me? It doesn't matter. I mean, don't even go there to think if God is punishing you or not. This life is just to help us go to the next life. That's what matters. So if people are dying in Africa without food, it doesn't mean that God is not just. But the more they will suffer here, the more they will receive in next life.
I see. Thank you.
That's right.
Can you explain this a bit more?
Yes. Yes and no. Because books have been written about NIPSIS, and
Is that becoming one more?
NIPSIS is a Greek word. It literally means nipho. It literally means I do not drink wine. But the meaning of NIPSIS is that I do not accept any thoughts in my mind, positive or negative, in order to focus on God. And the ascetics, they were using it for Jesus prayer. So they were rejecting every thought. Let's say that you're about to pray, to do your personal prayers with a prayer rope. You say Jesus prayer, and a thought comes into your mind and says, I should do this at work. That's a very good solution for the problem we've got. That's from the tempter. That's not from God. It might look good if it is during your prayer, if the phone rings, if whatever happens, nothing is acceptable. You just need to reject everything and then use with NIPSI the prayer, and these two can lead you into the union with God. But when we say NIPSI in our life in general, that's when it's related with prayer. When we say NIPSI in our life in general, it means to reject every distraction that can lead you away from your goal, which is the eternal kingdom. So let's say that you have studied law. I don't know, I'm just saying. You can't practice this profession in a way that you will be lying, because this will lead you away from heaven. So if you were to practice law, find a branch that is honest and follow this, and then you practice law and you also, you can focus on God, if this makes any sense. Any other questions?
In the epistle of the Apostle Paul that you read, somewhere you're saying that the world was not worthy of them. What does this mean?
It means the Bible, the New Testament and the Old Testament, they mean a lot of things. So whatever we say, it's not enough and doesn't cover anything. It's just one possible interpretation. But it means that they were so righteous that they were worthy of the next life, and yet this small and material world did not behave to them accordingly to what they deserved, I think. Anything else?
But another question regarding some practical advice in helping us to focus and to reject those negative and positive thoughts that you were talking about earlier. As far as, working people, family people, for example, people like most of us that live here, how can we actually improve our focus? I guess that's the question.
Nipsis, once you try to get into this path, it is a struggle, but then Nipsis itself shows you the path and becomes everything you yourself need to know. So, for example, you start by trying to close off all the negative thoughts, and then because you stay in the guard of your intellect and what's about to enter, good or bad, and you're standing there, like, metaphorically speaking, you're standing in the gate of your intellect, and you guard it so that nothing bad will enter your mind, you get the ability to see things coming towards you. You get the ability to realize that, you get a sense that something will attack me now, or you get a sense that this that just entered my brain doesn't give me peace, so it's not from God. So what happens is, we ourselves, we don't know anything. Of course, you need a spiritual father that can help you with these things, but at the same time, it's God himself who teaches us what the next thing will be. Like all the saints, some of the saints, they only had some books to read, and they didn't have the luxury of having spiritual fathers all the time to get advice from, like if they were in the desert. So they had to fight with whatever God was giving them. But if we stay humble, if we pray to Panagia, and yes, so let's put this in as it is. They asked once an elder, I think it was Saint Porphyrios, how can we, because this has to do with Nipsis, how can we avoid getting tricked from the devil in our spiritual life? Getting, I think the word is deluded. And he said, you have to do these things. You have to have an elder that has very your spiritual father, who should have very strong prayers. So he has to have parisia enopion to Theou. So he has to be, his presence in front of God has to count. So he has to be an ascetic and a holy man. Then you have to pray to Panagia a lot because he can protect you, and you have to love and read the gospel, because within the gospel, every day, you can find ways of what to do and what not to do. You read the gospel and you understand it as you understand it, but when the gospel opens up to you, then the gospel can tell you on a daily basis what to do and what not to do. And it sounds weird, but that's how some saints were going through the temptations, and they were ending up becoming holier and avoiding the tempter. So what I'm trying to tell you is that you start your struggle towards Nipsi, and Nipsi itself will give you the tools, will give you the weapons, and will give you the ways for the next step and for the next step and for the next step. And then when God enlightens your intellect, then you can tell what's right and what's wrong. They asked once Saint Silwan, how you can tell if a thought is from the tempter or if the thought is from God. Because sometimes the thoughts, they are deceiving. They look good and they might be like really terrible. If they're like wolves in sheep's clothing. So the answer that St. Silwan gave, you understand the thoughts from the taste. So once you get this spiritual taste, you can tell if something is from God and if something is not from God. Because logically, it doesn't make any sense. Logically, you can't tell if this is from God or not. But from the taste, you understand if this is for you right to do today or not. And this taste is your conscience, is the peace that you have in your heart, is the feeling that you get every time that you pray, and you know that if you have this feeling when you pray for something, it means go ahead. And if you don't have this feeling, it means stay away. You can pray for something and get anxious about it, so stay away from it. Or you can pray for something and have a good feeling. The same way that you can pray for a person and feel, have a good feeling inside you, and this means that this person is in a good place, and you can pray for a person and feel anxious, it means that this person is not in a good place. I don't know if this is too complicated. But basically, God does everything. We just need to focus on Him. Just focus on Him, and He will teach you whatever you need to know, and He will get you wherever you need to be. That's it. It's very simple. All these, they happen by themselves. You don't need to worry about all these things. Just focus on God. Yes. We need to follow our spiritual father's advice. That's essential. Yes, of course. And we can't trust in ourselves.